This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large for Monday afternoon, July 15th, 2019. Ahead this hour, not everybody in Arkansas lives close to a dentist, so mobile dentistry is taking help to rural places. That story from Arkansas Public Media in our second half hour. And Caitlin Ahrens will explain what exomoons are on the latest edition of Scratching the Surface. After Ozarks on NPR's Here and Now, it was 50 years ago this week that Apollo 11 astronauts landed on the moon for the first time. It took 8 years and more than 400,000 people to make it happen. The story of Apollo 11 in the afternoon's news on Here and Now, beginning at 1 on 91.3. And you have a chance to see the 2019 Bentonville Film Festival Audience Award winner tonight in Bentonville as part of a program called BFF Mondays. Tonight at 5, Skylight Cinema will screen Our Quinceanera, about a high school principal in Texas who hosts an annual quinceanera for students who cannot afford their own. A question-and-answer session with the filmmaker follows the movie. You can find out more at the Facebook page for the Bentonville Film Festival. This is Ozarks at Large. The current best-selling book on the fiction list this week is, again, Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens. It has spent nearly a year at or very near the top spot of the New York Times bestsellers list for fiction. The book has also been selected as this year's What If All Arkansas Read the Same Book choice by the Arkansas State Library System. Saturday, Delia Owens will make a pair of appearances in Northwest Arkansas. At 11 a.m., she'll be at the Bentonville Public Library. That event is free with no registration required, but a large audience is expected, so free tickets will be distributed Saturday on a first-come, first-served basis. Patrons must be present to receive a ticket, one ticket per person, and that ticket will need to be shown for seating. Doors open at 10:30 Saturday in Bentonville. Overflow parking for that event available in public lots at Community Development and Downtown Activity Center. Saturday afternoon, Delia Owens will sit down with me for a public conversation at the Fayetteville Public Library. That begins at 3. It's also free, and it will also be streamed live through the Fayetteville Public Library live stream page. So to get a preview of what Delia Owens might talk about this weekend, we called her Friday afternoon and asked her about Where the Crawdads Sing, a novel about a young girl, Kaya, living a nearly isolated life in the marshes of the North Carolina coast. It's part biological investigation, part mystery, part courtroom drama, and part study of self-reliance. Delia Owens says she can relate to the isolation preteen Kaya experiences after her family leaves her through a series of events, because Delia Owens has spent time in isolation as well.
I studied wildlife in Africa for 23 years. At one stage, my coworker and I were the only two people in an area the size of Ireland. That's isolation. But also then in the Luangwa Valley, we studied elephants, and I had a camp out on my own for months at a time. I have lived isolation for most of my adult life. Even in Idaho, I would only see other people once a week. But in Africa, I was truly isolated. And the point, one of the main points of Where the Crawdads Sing is that Kaya was, this young girl was forced to live in isolation. And what I learned in Africa is that isolation changes a person. It really does. And Kaya suffered through not only isolation, but rejection, and she was discriminated against. And those things change us. And the reason that's true is that we have the genetic propensity to be social animals. We, all of our closest relatives, and we have the same genes to live in groups. And yet she was forced to be isolated. And when a person is rejected and isolated, we have to expect, if we discriminate against them or we force them to live in that way, we have to expect that they are going to behave differently, because they will.
And one thing that happens with Kaya in I think it's the first fourth of the book, is that one day of school. And so it hit me that as she has been isolated and away from many other people, whatever happens on that one day when she was forced to be around a lot of people is a magnified experience for her. Am I reading that correctly?
That's correct. That's correct. And that's what does happen. That's what happened to me after isolation. When you're isolated and you come back, you everything someone says to you is emphasized. It's like coming through an amplifier. It's like coming through an amplifier because you feel like, oh, wait a minute, did I talk too long on that answer? Did I answer that correctly? They're making a facial expression as though I'm saying something wrong. And you overread and overanalyze what other people are saying. You become socially inept.
Mm. I'm speaking with
you. You lose your confidence. You lose your social confidence, and that can have a bad impact on you.
Well, that leads into my exact next question I was going to ask. I'm speaking with Delia Owens, author of Where the Crawdads Sing, is that what I love about Kaya is that in some respects she has so little confidence in things she does when she's playing the little game with leaving a feather or a trinket. But in other aspects, she has to gain so much other self-confidence, like, you know, getting on the water and fending for herself. So there is this weird sort of juxtaposition of a lot of confidence where a lot of people wouldn't have it, and then lack of confidence where some of us do have it. And I thought that was a very interesting personality trait of hers.
Thank you for seeing that. That's one of the main points of the book, and that is so true. And the point is that Kaya teaches us that we can do a lot more than we think we can. And you see, I thought I was in charge. I thought I was the author. And as I started writing her, I knew she was going to be shy. I knew she was going to be afraid of people. But what I didn't realize is every time I threw an obstacle in her way, she found a way to solve it. To survive, she had to figure out how to collect food. She had to discover how to defend herself and cook. She had to learn all those things. So every time she solved a problem, she gained more confidence. She became very independent. Then she became smart and witty and even gritty. And that's what happens when we have to do more. We learn more, and then we gain a lot of self-confidence.
I was amazed at how, as we're watching her grow and learn, it seems like you have an economy of words there, because there's so much that has to happen over a period of time. And I wondered if you ever struggled with just the right amount of words to where we weren't anchored down in this one task we had to learn, but we didn't feel as though we were getting the Cliff Notes version of her life either. And how did you manage to strike that balance?
I wrote many drafts of this novel, not just one. I wrote many. And I knew I had to get that right. So I worked hard on that part of it. I wanted it to be believable. Mm. Here, I knew it was a stretch from the very beginning that a young girl was going to be mostly on her own. That's the reason I always had some adult somewhere in the background. She was never totally on her own. I wanted it to be very believable. And I knew that it was important that she learn how to do just a right amount to live and to survive, but it took a long time for her to become accomplished enough to thrive.
Was there any difference in how you approached the two different eras of time in the book when you were writing them?
Well, yes. I mean, I had to be very careful with that. For one thing, the language is different. I mean, the Southern accents were stronger in the earlier days, especially for her before she became more educated. Also, you know, the way other people spoke evolved a little bit. The time moved forward, so there were more modern conveniences and that sort of thing. So it was very tricky to go back and forth between the two time frames. Probably not as much as in some other settings, because her particular livelihood, her particular style of life, I should say, was didn't change that much over the years. She lived in that same spot and lived a fairly primitive life throughout. So I didn't have to struggle too much with that.
Kaya, of course, is our protagonist, but I feel almost equally as important a character is the landscape where she lives. And how did you go about making sure that we, as much as we could, understand where she lives?
That was very important to me. The landscape, the marsh of the Wild Coast of North Carolina is actually almost a character in this book. It's very important. And I wanted that to be very real. I wanted the reader to feel like they were there. I wanted them to smell the marsh, to feel the breeze, and to, you know, taste the salty water. I wanted it all to be very real as a character would be. So I worked hard on that. And also, some of the mysteries in this story are brushed into the background of the marsh. So a lot of the detail, I tried very hard not to put too much detail. You know, people don't want you to go on and on. You have to be careful about description and detail, no matter which facet you're talking about in the book. But I wanted the reader to read enough detail that they would realize that there are some clues to the mystery.
I'm speaking with Delia Owen. She's the author of Where the Crawdads Sing. You know, there are not many shared experiences left in our world now, because so many different ways you can consume media and so many different places where people can get information. What I found interesting, I have been in 5 or 6 settings in the last several months, and there's always multiple people who have read this book. Once again, we can have a conversation about the same novel and interesting conversations. What does that mean to you as a writer?
It means everything. I think with most writers, the most important thing is to have readers. You want, it's communication is a two-way street. You what do words mean if no one reads them? And it just meant so much to me when people began loving this book, and more people have contacted me, and it has done very well. And I am just so grateful about, I am so grateful for that. But I'm also so thrilled that readers are not just loving the book. So many of them are getting the messages. There's some deep messages in this book about being lonely, how to look after ourselves, how to keep going when times are tough. And I've had so many readers contact me with how much the book has meant to them.
You mentioned that you said when you started writing this book, you thought you were the boss and you were in control, and then you found out maybe you weren't, because Kaya was there and she was somewhat directing. How much did you identify with her as you were writing?
Identify a lot with Kaya. There's a lot of me in Kaya. I was an outside girl. I was independent. I went off on my own a lot in the wilderness, and I loved wildlife. I made a life and a livelihood of studying nature. So there's a lot of me in Kaya. I was fortunate to have a loving, wonderful family. I didn't suffer that part of her story, but a lot of her story is similar to my life. But I think there's a lot of Kaya in all of us, and that is one of the main points. She represents that part of us that has strength and character and can do so much to keep going when we find ourselves in a dark place.
She is introduced to a Sand County Almanac relatively early, especially relatively early in her reading world, and I wonder if that was the same for you.
Yes. Sand County Almanac was the first book I read with such strong nature writing, and it changed my life, really. I loved the writing, and for years after that, all those years I was writing nonfiction books about our studies and adventures in Africa, I wanted to write a novel that would bring nature writing into the novel.
Where the Crawdads Sing, Delia Owens, thank you so much for your time. We look forward to your appearances in Arkansas. And you're part of, this is, of course, what if all of Arkansas read the same book? Based on my experiences, maybe by the time you're here, everyone in Arkansas will have read this book. It's very beloved here.
Well, thank you so much. I've had a lot of fabulous Front from Arkansas. I'm so excited about coming. I appreciate the invitation, and I look forward to meeting you there.
Delia Owens is the author of Where the Crawdads Sing, the current best-selling novel in the country, and the 2019 selection for What If All Arkansas Read the Same Book. She'll speak at the Bentonville Public Library Saturday morning at 11. That event is free, no registration required, but please remember, free tickets will be distributed Saturday on a first-come, first-served basis. You'll have to be present to receive the ticket, one per person, and that will have to be shown for seating. Doors open at 10:30 Saturday. She'll also be at the Fayetteville Public Library Saturday afternoon at 3 for a public conversation with me. That, too, is free. That will also be streamed through the Fayetteville Public Library's live stream page. This is Ozarks at Large.
Now open at the Scott Family Amazium, Studio Grow. Designed for families of early learners, 6 and younger, Studio Grow features activities for curious kids. Families can explore on their own or drop in for a weekly Partners in Playdate. Monthly themes explore science, technology, engineering, arts, and math through playful, hands-on discovery. Amazium.org for information.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Community Blood Center of the Ozarks serves more than 40 hospitals in 40 counties in southeast Kansas, southwest Missouri, and northwest Arkansas. Last week, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda visited the organization's donation center in Springdale to learn more about the need for certain blood types in northwest Arkansas. She spoke with blood drive consultant Meredith Johnson, who says it's pretty typical for there to be a shortage during the summer.
During the academic year, high schools, colleges make up about 30% of the blood supply. And so since there are no high schools, colleges having drives this time of the year, we tend to run short. Right now, we've really struggled with A positive and O negative. As everyone knows, O negative is the universal type, so it can go to anyone that's in a trauma and they don't have time to blood type them. Or if there's just a shortage within that hospital of a blood type, they will go grab O negative.
What constitutes a shortage? Is there a certain amount of a specific type or in general that you like to have, and when you fall below that number, that's a shortage? Or how do you sort of decide?
Yeah, we kind of forecast based on the usage of the hospitals, and Wednesdays are our big service days where we load the hospitals down with their orders. So we kind of monitor what's going on with the hospitals, the usage. We strategize and plan out to determine how many drives we need to book and how many units a day we need to book. Right now, we've got it figured out. We need 200 units a day to supply our hospitals, and so that would be more than a three-day supply. When we fall below that three-day supply, so say we fall below 300 units of a pause, then, we're in a shortage.
And when you have a shortage, what are the steps for you here at the Community Blood Center of the Ozarks to sort of get the word out and resolve that issue?
Yeah, we, hit up the media and let them know, and we really depend on them to get the word out for us. And then the drives that we currently have on the schedule, I usually send out that daily inventory to our chair people, and they get the word out to their donors and just try to increase, the participation in their drives.
So if I'm listening to this and I want to donate, how can I do that? Is it okay if I'm not the specific kind that you need?
Oh, I mean, we're always needing blood because, blood has a shelf life of 42 days. It constantly has to be replenished. One week we may be short on O neg, the next week it may be O pause, and then for 4 weeks it may be A pause. I mean, it just constantly changes. We don't know the donors that specifically come in. We never know what their type's going to be, and we really try to do the right type at the right time. And so it's just a constant inventory management. So we have, tele-recruitment group that goes after certain types that we're needing. But anyone is welcome to come in at any time. We're very good with our inventory management and blood usage distribution. So you just have to weigh 110 pounds. 17 is the age you can be without parental consent. You can come donate with a parental consent form, but it does have to be Community Blood Center of the Ozarks. You can download that from our website, cbco.org, and general good health. We ask that you hydrate well for a couple of days. Definitely eat a good meal. And there's no upper age limit. And we put everybody through a little short health history and have them ask plenty of, answer plenty of questions and make sure that everyone's in general good health and meets the FDA criteria before we let them donate.
When there is a shortage, do you try to set up extra blood drives perhaps?
If we have the staff and equipment, we do, but we kind of book drives 3, 4, 5 months out, and so that's why forecasting is so important. That's why our tele-recruitment department's important. We really rely on the center donors to come in during those times, because typically we don't have the resources just to add a last-minute blood drive.
So what are some of the upcoming blood drives?
So we have a blood drive coming up on the 15th, Monday the 15th, at Church of God in Christ in Gentry. And then we have one that's open to the public on the 16th, and it's at Mercy in Rogers. And then Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport is doing a blood drive on the 18th. And then Siloam Springs Regional has a blood drive open to the public on the 19th. Anyone can get on our website, cbco.org, and you know, look up blood drives around their area and find drives that are open to the public.
Anything else we should know?
I think it's important for everyone in Northwest Arkansas just to know that we are the sole supplier of blood to all the hospitals and the medevacs, and that, you know, during the summer, we just would appreciate it if you would come in, donate blood, help save your neighbor, your, you know, a family member, or yourself. You just never know.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That was Meredith Johnson, a blood drive consultant for the Community Blood Center of the Ozarks. She spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda last week. For more information about this week's blood drives or to schedule an appointment, you can visit cbco.org. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith will host its summer blood drive tomorrow from 9 to 4 in the Reynolds Room of the Smith Pendergraph Campus Center on the UAFS campus. Each donor will receive a free health screening, a free T-shirt, and a choice of free admission tickets to a variety of attractions.
Have we found exomoons? I'm Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager with the U of A Center for Space and Planetary Science, and this is Scratching the Surface. There are 175 known moons in our entire solar system, each having different kinds of chemical properties and geologic surfaces. Some are even candidates for harboring ocean life, such as Europa and Enceladus. Exomoons, or extrasolar moons, are moons that orbit an exoplanet way outside of our own solar system. So over 4,000 exoplanets have been discovered by space telescopes. But have we found any exomoons? The answer is, maybe. Astronomers from Columbia University in New York first reported a possible exomoon in late 2018. Using the NASA Hubble Space Telescope, the team observed Kepler-1625b, a Jupiter-sized exoplanet passing in front of its host star. However, the observation turned unexpected. The transition of the exoplanet in front of its host star seemed just a bit off, appearing like another object maybe tugging on the exoplanet, followed by a mysterious shadow, possibly indicating a moon trailing behind. The candidate exomoon is about the size of Neptune, which is unusual for a satellite size. Typically, moons of such very large planets are much, much, much smaller than the planet it orbits. The size difference is actually considered impossible by our own solar system standards. However, the search continues. Finding any tiny icy ocean moons like Enceladus or Europa may possibly be way too small to detect with our current technology. For more on the Center for Space and Planetary Science, or for more segments of Scratching the Surface, spacecenter.uark.edu.
Scratching the Surface with your host, Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager, is a production of 91.3 FM, KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville. This is a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas.
And all summer long, there have been events tied into the 50th anniversary of the first moon landing, and on our Thursday edition of Ozarks, we get a preview of another. Northwest Arkansas Space is hosting an event on the Bentonville Square in honor of that 50th anniversary.
It's there for everyone to share. We all get to look at the same moon, and it's, you know, a bond that we all can share and stand there and go, ooh, look at that crater.
That's on our Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large. And tomorrow on Ozarks, a first for us. It may not be as groundbreaking as landing a person on the moon, but we still think it's pretty cool. We'll have a house band with us. Jamie Lou and the Hullabaloo will join us in the Furman Garner Performance Studio as our first ever house band for the entire hour. That's on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3. Residents in Rogers and Lowell will have several opportunities to tell city leaders how they would like to see their cities grow as more people move to the region. The Rogers-Lowell Area Chamber of Commerce recently launched Vision 100, a planning project that gets its name from the 100,000 population milestone the cities will reach in less than 15 years. The next input session is tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. at First Baptist Church of Rogers on Pleasant Grove Road. There will be five more later this month. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Chamber President and CEO Raymond Burns about this latest planning endeavor.
Tell me just where Rogers is right now from where it was, let's say, 10 or 15 years ago, since you're looking 10 or 15 years ahead.
Well, we certainly, because of the visioning process that we have a museum. We certainly have a proper library. We have fire stations, our public safety facilities are second to none. The police department is properly equipped. They have a building, we have city hall, we have a proper central fire station, and we have miles and miles of roads, sidewalks, other amenities that we wouldn't have otherwise. We have the adult wellness center. We have some really fabulous parks and more on the way. All of those were visioned by the community, and we then go to city government and say, please, help us figure out how to make this happen. And of course, Rogers, like the other cities in Northwest Arkansas, choose to use a 1% sales tax that's dedicated to retiring bonds. That's the only thing it can be used for. And as I said last year, we were fortunate enough that the voters by over 80% approved the next bond issue, which is kind of like refinancing your house. We paid off the old mortgage, and we've got some new stuff out there, about $300 million worth. So we're very fortunate to live in an area where the voters understand that to fund the priorities we need, you're going to have to tax yourself.
So when people come to these input sessions, at the time that we're speaking, there'll be six more this month. What should people be thinking about when they're coming to these to tell you guys?
We have one key question that we ask, and that is, we're at 67,000 people today. We'll be at 100,000 people and very, very soon. So what's your vision for the community? What do you want us to be when we grow up? What are the things we can do to ensure that we have the quality of life that you've come to expect that caused you to either want to move here or to stay here? What's your vision? What's your dream?
Can that be in any realm?
Absolutely, and it has been in any realm. We've had conversations about feeling safe and how safe people do feel. We've talked with some populations within our community who feel like that they could be safer. And it's because of circumstance, but it's also a trust issue. Some of our Latino community need to feel like that they are that they can go and report crime to the police without necessarily feeling like they're going to get in trouble with ICE or with the federal government. And you know, our police department has worked very, very well with all of our communities here. But that's a message we need to continue to spread. So that's one of the things that came up just last night. There needs to be more evening entertainment. That's something that we're hearing a lot of. It's not just the streets, but it's what kind of opportunity is there if I'm interested in the arts? We have the Arkansas Arts Academy here, a great public charter school that that works very, very well. So there are a number of things. We need more green space. We need more parks. We're working very diligently to we put millions of dollars into parks, as all of our communities have in Northwest Arkansas. So there is an answer to each one of these questions. Our city government provides excellent services, but this is also a listening session for them to figure out how actually to do a better job. And thank goodness we have a city government in Rogers and in Lowell that's willing to listen and willing to respond to the people and do as much as they can to try and make this not only a safe place, but a great place to live. I just wish we could do everything that everybody brought up. Unfortunately, we can't. So we also get to prioritize just a little bit.
How can these plans and all this input be used later?
Well, as soon as we've gathered all of the input, and that will be towards the end of this month and the first part of next month, we'll take and compile all of this data, and a report will be written, the Vision 100 report, about mid-October, I think around the 17th. We'll have a day-long conference where we'll call the community's leadership together. We'll present it at that time to them, and it will be released to the public at that time as well. And it becomes a living, breathing document. Department heads use it, of course, within city government. City government uses it. The chamber uses it. We use it to reach out to other not-for-profit organizations. And if you will, the chamber, as the keeper of the vision, also acts as the quarterback, sometimes as the coach calling the plays and saying, hey, Group X, will you take this? City, this is something that's more suited to you all. This is something that we will do. And so instead of having everybody rushing to do the same thing, we're actually able to allow the different organizations within the community to know what those needs are. And then if they choose to take those on, then we know we've checked that box. Somebody's taking care of it. All we have to do then is go back and monitor and make sure that the quality is there in what we do.
This is a plan for the next 10 years, 10, 15 years. Stuff has been changing really quickly in Northwest Arkansas. How can you plan for the next 10 years here?
Well, there's the 10-year plan, there's the 5-year plan, and there's the 5-minute plan. So there's a lot of 5-minute planning that goes on when you're growing by, when you're in a region that grows by 30 people a day. You obviously have to be ready to punt. You have to be able to call an audible. And fortunately, we're able to do that. And sometimes opportunity knocks. You have to be willing, but you also have to be able.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for being here.
That was Raymond Burns, the president and CEO of the Rogers Lowell Area Chamber of Commerce, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. You can find information about all the input sessions at rogerslowell.com. That's where you can also find an online survey for Vision 100. Burns says there will also be additional input meetings scheduled in Lowell before the end of the month.
I'm Andrea Fournay, the owner of the Arkansas Yoga and Therapy Center. I love KOAF because of its diversity, inclusiveness, and broad-reaching programs. For over 20 years, I've been listening to KOAF, especially Saturday mornings when I can listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I'm a proud member of KOAF 91.3.
With me at the Carver Center for Public Radio is Becca Martin Brown, features editor of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. It is Monday, July 15.
And you know how much I love the path less often traveled.
Yes, you do.
Well, here's an example of the breadth of arts offerings in Northwest Arkansas.
I love the way you do this.
It's National Moth Week.
Yes, it is.
Who knew? Apparently you did.
Well, Don Steinkraus emailed me and told me.
He emailed me and told me, too. And he's going to be speaking Friday night at Crystal Bridges Museum. So you might say, as I said to Don Steinkraus, what in the world do moths have to do with art? Here's his answer. Vincent van Gogh painted a great painting of the giant peacock moth that's in the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam. The great American painter Charles Birchfield painted a summer storm with the Cecroptera moth in it called The Moth and the Thunderclap. Mm-hmm. Audubon painted moths in his paintings of birds. And of course, there's the giant moth in the 1961 Japanese film Mothra.
And don't forget, it plays a bit role in Silence of the Lambs.
Yes, this is true. Don Steinkraus is an entomologist at the University of Arkansas. And since July 20th through 28th is National Moth Week, he wants us to know that moths are often as beautiful as butterflies.
Agreed.
And there are moths that look like hummingbirds.
Mm-hmm. Wait,
and,
what?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
The hummingbird moth.
Okay, this is news to me, but go
this
ahead.
This I actually know about. If you see, it looks like a tiny, tiny hummingbird.
Okay.
But it's a moth.
Wow. All right.
And it eats like a hummingbird.
Wow, I had no. Do we have them around here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
And then he says that you also need to remember that moths are useful because a lot of them make silk.
Yes. So there you go.
So there you go. So he's going to talk about some of the things you can do to help moths, which is quit putting up all the outdoor lights.
Quit putting them up.
Yeah.
Because that attracts them and keeps them from doing what they should
do. Yeah. And then leave areas in your yard or garden where they can pupate and be left alone. He calls them untidy areas.
Got it covered. My yard should be a moth haven.
Heaven.
Yes.
Use chemical poison sparingly because not only does it kill the moths and the butterflies and the pollinators, but it kills their food source, like dandelions, which are a really good food source. Okay. And plant diverse native plants.
All right. None of that's too hard.
You'll find out all of this Friday from 7 to 9. He's going to talk, and then they're going to go walking outside to see if they can see some of these moths, because they're generally seen at night.
Right.
And you can register at crystalbridges.org. And then, on the far end of some kind of spectrum.
Yes, moths to?
Victorian clothing.
Okay.
At the Rogers Historical Museum.
I bet there's some Victorian clothing that has been a meal for a moth or two.
That might be true.
Yes.
This is kind of fun because Jennifer Kick, who is their collections manager, had a couple of summer interns. Mm-hmm. And she did what any good boss should do. She said, what do you want to do an exhibit on?
Sure.
And they came up with Victorian clothing because they had this interesting concept about we see Victorian clothing, particularly for women, as all the high collars and the long skirts and everything buttoned up. But then you realize that they also did all these undergarments that were to create this perfect shape. And mm-hmm. so there was this planned sensuality in all the covering. Mm-hmm. And they've put out a great temporary exhibit that shows these things, including the beautiful colored, one of the beautiful colored wedding dresses that they wore because they didn't wear white then. And you can go check this out through September 28th at the Rogers Historical Museum. They're open 10 to 5 Monday through Saturday. It is, of course, as always, free. On Wednesday, sandwiched in at the Shiloh Museum at noon is Jesse Core, the founder of Core Brewing, talking about the evolution of beer in Arkansas. I wonder if they'll have tasting.
And where is this?
Shiloh Museum.
Maybe. I don't know.
Thursday, there's an artist reception from 4 to 6 at the Bentonville branch of the First National Bank of Northwest Arkansas. That's the art gallery that Zeke Taylor is curator of. And the artists this month are Gary Johnson, Adriana Petrucco, Daniel Costin, and Diana Hossam.
Okay.
Diana Michelle. And then the Basin Park Music Series from 5 to 7 next Saturday. Arlo McKinley and the Lonesome Sound. And next Saturday is also the Firefly Fling at the Botanical Garden. God, I got that the first time. At the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks in Fayetteville. We'll have more of that next time.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
This is Ozarks at Large. A shortage of bricks and mortar dental clinics in Arkansas is resulting in more mobile dentistries taking to the road. As David Monteith with Arkansas Public Media reports, more traveling dentists are providing affordable oral health care in different ways.
Geographic distance is a core reason why routine dental care is a challenge for many Arkansans, says Lindy Bolin. He's the state director of the Office of Oral Health in Little Rock.
In the state of Arkansas, because we are a rural state, you will find 60% or more of the dentists distributed within less than 10 counties. As a result, we have areas of the state where you have fewer number of dental providers for the population that's there.
To reach the state's other 65 counties, some dentists are putting their practices on wheels. The open road was appealing to Up Dentistry, a privately owned mobile dentistry based in Northwest Arkansas, which treats patients where they are, says Lisa Wolf.
Our equipment is mobile. The high-speed handpiece, the suction, everything that we need, including our supplies, is brought inside with a zero-gravity chair, and we set up within just a few minutes right inside of the facility or home or office.
Since opening a year ago, Up Dentistry has mainly served patients inside senior living communities, including residents with dementia disorders.
Working with Alzheimer's residents and patients, a trip to the dentist can be very disruptive to their day. There's the potential for falls, different things like that. Having us to be able to come in and set up and take care of residents without ever having to leave the building is such a plus for senior living communities.
Arkansas Children's Hospital serves the other end of the age spectrum, impoverished kids. According to the Arkansas State Board of Dental Examiners, there are 12 licensed active mobile dentists in the state, and Children's Hospital is responsible for 4. During the school year, staff park fully equipped mobile vans outside partner schools, treating students who live in medically underserved areas. Laura Udaj, DDS, has been the primary dentist in the Children's Hospital's Central Arkansas van for more than 4 years.
It's been so rewarding to work for this. I'm going to just get choked up here, but it has been so rewarding to work for this program. I've worked with children in a private office, and it always came back to what the parents could afford. So the treatment that you provided was dictated by money, and at this program, I have never felt that way.
Anna Strong oversees the Children's Hospital Mobile Dental Program as part of her role as the Executive Director of Child Advocacy and Public Health.
Cavities are the number one chronic disease for children, and oral health is a big predictor of longer-term physical health and contributes to poorer physical health if your oral health needs are not taken care of. So our mobile dental vans are really part of helping to address one of the most common chronic disease for children in Arkansas.
Arkansas Mission of Mercy has a similar mission. The Organization of Volunteer Dentists hosts an annual 2-day event drawing hundreds of volunteer dental care providers from across the state who bring portable equipment to treat patients on a first-come, first-served basis, free of charge. Since 2007, the event has provided dental care to over 20,000 Arkansans. In Little Rock, I'm David Monteith, Arkansas Public Media.
Support for this series on oral health in Arkansas comes from the Delta Dental of Arkansas Foundation, working to increase access to dental care in the state and improve the oral health of all Arkansans.
This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for spending part of your Monday with us. The newly formed Arkansas Levy Task Force held its first meeting in Little Rock Friday. The task force was formed by Governor Asa Hutchinson in response to historic flooding along the Arkansas River in late May. Governor Hutchinson says identifying weaknesses in the state system of levies is a top priority.
What you're going to do in this levy task force will be significant for the state of Arkansas for future generations. We talk about the time when they built the levees. Well, I want them to talk about the time that we restored the levees and we repaired the systems and got it functional again so that we can address potential floods in the future.
The governor says the group should also strive for a greater partnership with the Army Corps of Engineers, as well as citizens, county and state government, and local levy boards. The board is made up of state lawmakers, county judges, and cabinet-level officials, as well as engineers and local farmers from areas affected by this spring's flooding. The governor formed the task force through executive order late last month while announcing $10 million to go toward the State Department of Emergency Management to repair damaged levees. Chances for rain extend into tonight for the entire region. The National Weather Service forecast includes a 40% chance of showers or thunderstorms through the night, with lows from 68 to 72. A slight chance of rain tomorrow, highs from 86 to 91. And in the Arkansas River Valley, heat index values as high as 101 tomorrow afternoon. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals don't play today, but they do launch a 7-game swing through Texas tomorrow night with a game in Corpus Christi. The Nats drop 3 of 4 home games against Tulsa this weekend in Springdale. Naturals back at Arvest on Wednesday, July 24th.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Hey, Pedro, where is Lolito?
Among his many musical innovations, R&B pioneer Louis Jordan of Brinkley helped introduce calypso music to North America, and his 1947 song Early in the Morning was the Arkansas' first to pay homage to the island-based musical genre.
Early in the morning and I can't get right. Had a little date with my baby last night. Now it's early in the morning. Early in the morning. Early in the morning and I ain't got nothing but the blues.
Recorded in April 1947, the Rumba Blues features the Calypso Boys guesting on percussion. Several esteemed members of Louis Jordan's Timpani Five play on the track, like trumpeter Aaron Eisenhall, pianist Wild Bill Davis, and drummer Joe Chris Columbus Morris. Chuck Berry-influenced Carl Hogan of St. Louis plays electric guitar, while Cave Spring, Missouri-born bassist Dallas Bartley gets co-writing credit, along with Louis Jordan and Leo Hickman. Early in the Morning was originally released in October 1947 as a 78 single, with Lookout as the B-side.
Hey, lady, you think I'm Spanish, but I ain't.
Monroe County native Louis Jordan returned to other Afro-Cuban-styled songs and continued performing early in the morning, including featuring it in his 1949 Western-themed movie, Lookout Sister.
Early in the morning and I can't get right. Had little date with my baby last night. Now it's early in the morning. Early in the morning, and I ain't got nothing but the blues.
Early in the Morning was a well-regarded enough hit from Louis Jordan's back catalog that it was among the first on the list when the Arkansasian re-recorded his biggest songs a decade later for a new label, Mercury, on the new long-playing album format in 1956 and 1958, heard here.
And I can't get right. Had a little date with my baby last night. Now it's early in the morning. Ooh, in the morning. Early in the morning, and I ain't got nothing but the blues. I went to all the places where we used to go. I went to her house, but she don't live there no more. Now it's early in the morning.
Calypso music had caught on by then in the United States. In fact, even Lafayette County native Maya Angelou recorded a Calypso-themed album during this time, along with Harry Belafonte and the rest.
Early in the morning, I can't do right. Had a little fight with my baby last night, and it's early in the morning. Don't you know it's early in the morning?
Early in the Morning had its own life with a song beyond Louis Jordan the Timpani Five as well. The song appears in Five Guys Named Mo, the 1990s musical about Louis Jordan. It's heard on Ray Charles' 1961 album Genius Sings the Blues, one of many Louis Jordan songs Ray Charles recorded. Joe Cocker, Buddy Guy, Gapemouth Brown, Irma Thomas, and B.B. King have all covered it, the latter on his 1999 Louis Jordan tribute album. In the early 1970s, even songwriter Harry Nilsson recorded this version.
I went to Doobie Chase to get something to eat. The waitress looked at me, she said, "How you sure look beat." I said, "It's early in the morning. Don't you know it's early in the morning? Early in the morning."
The popularity of Early in the Morning has continued. Little Rock native Jim Dickinson included it among three Louis Jordan songs on his 2009 album, Dinosaurs Run in Circles. In 2010, Early in the Morning appeared on Cyndi Lauper's Memphis Blues album, recorded with Alan Toussaint. And the musical legacy of Monroe County's Louis Jordan stretches on. Here in its entirety is Arkansasian Louis Jordan of Brinkley's Early in the Morning, as sung by Cyndi Lauper on her 2010 album, Memphis Blues, recorded with Alan Toussaint.
Places that we used to go. Went to his
house, but he don't live there no more. Now it's early in the morning.
Early in the morning.
Ooh, in the morning.
Early in the morning.
Early in the morning, and I ain't got nothing but the blues. I went to his best friend's house, but he was out. I knocked on his mother's door. She began to shout.
Cyndi Lauper from her 2010 album Memphis Blues with Alan Toussaint singing Arkansaser Louis Jordan of Brinkley's Early in the Morning. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs, since 1998.
Contributors to this Monday edition of Ozarks included Antoinette Grajeda and Zuzana Sitek. Timothy Dennis mastered our show from the Harold and Blanche Cox News Studio. Scratching the Surface is written and hosted by Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto manager at the University of Arkansas, and produced by Pete Hartman in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio at KUAF. Additional content today provided by KUAR, Public Radio for Little Rock and Central Arkansas. Our story about mobile dentists, a production of Arkansas Public Media, that was edited by Jacqueline Froelich. Our Monday thanks to Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette for her help today. She'll be back with us Friday for a weekend preview of events. Don't forget, tomorrow in Ozarks, we'll have a house band. Jamie Lou and the Hullabaloo will be with us in the Furman Garner Performance Studio to play all of our music, sing some of their own songs, and even play a Hullabaloo-themed quiz. You can also catch them live Thursday night at George's Majestic Lounge. A house band, the Militant Grammarian, and much more on tomorrow's show at noon and 7 on 91.3. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. You can find out more about our show at ozarksatlarge.com. This is KUAF 91.3, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Rudy. We'll be back tomorrow at noon and 7 with a brand new edition of our show. Thanks so much for spending part of your Monday with us. I'm Kyle Kellums. Have a great rest of your Monday.